Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's good? My name is Chris Styles, it's Trapping Anonymous. Welcome back. Shout out to everybody that helps keep the movement moving. We really do appreciate it, keeping us viral. Shout out to all the sites and publications that have been posting and tagging and sharing. I just ask that, you know, y'all keep putting it out there so we can have more testimonies and more stories on the platform. If you want to reach out to me, you can DM me, you can write me. I do write back. That's how we get a lot of our guests. So, you know, don't be shy. I know it takes a lot of courage to get up here and to divulge such intimate, intense parts of your life. But we are eternally grateful, and we understand that healing is happening. Do remember that the story you hear does reflect real life. It's here. We are here to educate. We are here to entertain, but hopefully keep your little homie off the streets. This is Trapping Anonymous. My name is Chris Styles. Let's get it. How are you?
How you doing?
Okay, so how I start, what's your name and why is your story important?
Well, my name's Latoya, and my story is extremely important because I know we all heard the saying that shit was all good just a week ago. Yeah. I literally know what that feels like. So I'm here to make sure nobody puts themselves in that position and thinks twice before they do anything when they wake up, go to sleep, because life is super unexpected and it can change in a blink of an eye.
Take me back to that night.
I decided to go out, wake up, to get something to eat. You know, I was hungry. I was kind of tired, but something was telling me, nah, you should just stay at home, chill. I'm like, no, I'm hungry. I'm gonna go get me something to eat. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get your intuition. People don't listen to their intuition. They kind of brush it off, mm-hmm. like, whatever. I should listen to my intuition that night because my life was forever changed just because I wanted to go get something to eat instead of just staying home. I could have had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or something. I could have found something in the crib. But I just wanted to go out, get some wings, watch a game, just get out. All I remember is waking up in a hospital, not knowing how I got there, couldn't move, and was completely unaware what the hell was going on. Coming to find out, I had a major car accident and had to have surgery immediately. Didn't find out till later on that the other party in the accident, that there was another party in the accident, not just like me and the accident alone, that the other party passed away after being in a hospital for like over a week, which was extremely devastating to know that someone has passed away involved with something with me and I had something to do with it. So it was really drastic for me.
Okay. What happened that night? I know, to your knowledge, mm-hmm. you don't have it. But right. from what you were able to gather from evidence or, you know, other people, what happened?
Other people is a non-factor because no one seen the accident. You know how highways have cameras? Nothing was caught on camera. From the paperwork and information that I received, that someone made a phone call that it looks like there's been a possible accident because two cars were wrecked on the side of the road. Mm. Mind you, this was wee hours in the morning that this person called, like say maybe 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. I know for sure, the only thing I do remember is that when I did want to go get something to eat, it was early in the evening, like 8 o'clock at night. Mm. So why would this accident be at 8 o'clock in the morning? Like, that's how long I'm assuming that we were even out there in this accident, whenever it happened, however it happened, being unconscious. Maybe that's why I can't remember, but the hours never added up. But the phone call alone just determined that I was out there for hours. Me and the other party were out there for hours before we even got noticed.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a 12-hour span. From when you decided to leave your house and from the time you were picked up.
It's pretty long. Yeah, it's about that. It could be a little bit shorter. We really don't know precise timing because.
How do they know that you were at fault for the accident?
That's what the GBI said. And reckless driving, I got hit with reckless driving, vehicular homicide, which is a felony. I also got DUI, low count misdemeanor, because they took my blood and said that there was alcohol in my system, but not enough for have a higher charge. So you say to yourself, when you sit back and you get this information, you're like, damn. Now, I don't be driving around sloppy. If I do go out somewhere to a club, I'm with people. You're like, wait a minute, you're trying to remember the night, because I can't get no memory. I'm like, what the hell happened? Like, how did this accident happen? Like, this is crazy. How does someone pass away, which is devastating, ruining people's lives, my life? It's just traumatic in general to have to even deal with something like that. And then to not even know how it happened is even more confusing and upsetting and traumatizing, because you don't know how the accident happened. So you're going off of what people are gathering, information, putting the pieces together, and closing the case.
And there was no friends that hung out with you. There was no text messages with anyone. There was no maybe camera footage from a store, from a restaurant. There was no food in your car. There was nothing that would point to where you could have been.
Nothing. I called people. They tried to look at cameras in the area. Just nothing. Nothing. It's what they put together and how they feel it happened.
Why do you think your memory blocks out exactly anything that could help you remember what happened? Do you think that it was your memory that's doing that, that's not serving you properly? Or do you think it was because of the accident that your memory's not serving you properly?
I honestly, in my heart, feel like it literally was an accident, because they were surprised I survived. From what I hear, I had to get cut out of a car. I had surgery. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. I was in a wheelchair. The doctors were like, we can't believe you're here. So that impact of that accident was real serious. Someone passed away. So that accident was really serious.
Could it be the case that because it took so long to get you, that you naturally sobered up and the alcohol count wasn't as high by the time that they got to you?
It could be. It's an assumption. It's out there.
Right. Okay. What was the extent of your injuries?
I had a broken femur bone, concussion, back injury, 2 shattered ankles, and a shattered knee. So I have like little screws in my ankle and in my knee. Yeah, like rods. Yes.
You wake up in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Are you handcuffed?
No.
So you just wake up and it's just like, what happens next? Walk us through that first time you woke up.
All I seen was lights and I couldn't move. And it's just like, what's going on? It really kind of like waking out of a long sleep. Like you just don't know, confused. You don't know where you're at. Mm-hmm. And it was more of the, me hearing things, like picking up signs, like to know that I was in the hospital, like rolling and beeping. And I started saying, wait a minute, this ain't good. And then when I couldn't like get up, it was like, okay, yeah, this is bad. Like, what the hell is going on here?
What kinds of conversations are people having with you? Maybe the doctors, maybe family members.
No, I had to go when I woke up. The first time I was in emergency, going to the emergency room. So there was really nobody. It was just like, hey, we got to get you to the emergency room. I'm like, why? I don't want to go. I'm upset. I'm crying. And she's like, the nurse pushed me like, if you want to walk again, you got to go to surgery. And I just remember crying. And I remember saying to them, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And they're like, well, you have to. And then the surgeon was like, count from 100 down and you'll be knocked out. And I remember them putting me on the table and then counting. I got to like 98 and it was out, lights out for me.
You go home. And recovery process begins.
Yeah, extremely embarrassing, super depressing. Not knowing why this even happened. I didn't wake up when somebody passed away. I didn't wake up wanting to have an accident. to ruin my life. I was just really in denial, really lost for words. I couldn't take care of myself. My mother had to take care of me. I couldn't wash. I couldn't wipe my own ass.
Who told you that someone had passed away?
I only found that out because when I was in the hospital, I decided to make a phone call about the car. Like, what's going on with the car? So I called the impound and they were like, hey, you can't get your car back due to a fatality. And they were like, plus it's totaled. Your car's totaled. So you ain't getting it back anyway. And plus I was also just wondering what things in my car, like, did anyone take them out? So I was just curious. So I called the impound and that's what they told me. Like, you cannot get your car due to a fatality in an investigation with GBI.
I just want to take a moment to, one, speak on how many of us drink and drive. And if you haven't personally drank and drive and drove, you've gotten in the car with someone who has. Okay?
Of course.
Guaranteed. This is something that, one, like you said in the beginning, could happen to anyone.
Right.
You could be living a regular life and everything is all good. And we do see this as a cautionary tale. And we do know everyone says, do not drink and drive and this, that, and the third. But I'll just have a glass. I'm fine. Yep. I'll just have one cup. I'll just have a beer, whatever the case may be. I'll just smoke. You know, you got to be high. You know, it's just so many different ways that you could become inebriated and just get behind that wheel and just say, you know what, I'm going to just go get something to eat real quick.
Right. Even with, texting, eating, you know, you stop. You can't drive and eat, drive and text. A human in a vehicle is dangerous regardless. It's just dangerous. We have to pay attention at all times. People go to weddings, have drinks. People go out happy hour with their friends. People, like you say, have a beer, have one glass, don't finish a drink. They think they're okay. But guess what? You may not be. You may be super tired from the week before, might have a headache, and your body's just like, hey, that night, that day, whether you have a sip or don't, even if you're just extremely tired and you get behind the wheel without having nothing, whether it's drugs or a drink, your body might shut down. You might fall asleep. You might blink at the light, make a wrong, in an instant, boom, you in an accident. You don't, you're, that vehicle's not guaranteed to keep you alive.
Some point during your rehabilitation, the police come to your house.
Yeah, terrible. The detectives come after they get everything together and decide that and figure out that it's my fault, which, let me be clear on this. Knowing that someone passed away and I was involved in the accident, I took 100% responsibility of it because in my heart and in my eyes, whether they got the information right or wrong, I survived. And I rather have wanted the Lord to take me. I was like, damn, why you ain't take me? Because to even think about another family have to deal with a death was heartbreaking for me because we all deal with death in our families and it's hard to deal with. And me knowing that I could have been the cause of it or am the cause of it is something I couldn't bear. I couldn't sleep at night. I still can't get it together 100% with my feelings with that. I have my good days, I have my bad days. But having that on your heart when you care and you're an honest, loving human being, that hurts. You don't want other people sad or upset because it's a decision or a mistake you made when it was never intentional. That's hard to deal with.
From the time you went home for rehabilitation and to the time the detectives first knocked on your door, how much time elapsed?
From when I got home from the hospital, a good 30 days, 4 weeks.
A month?
Mm-hmm.
You were home for a month?
Yes.
And the detectives come knocking. And you're saying in that month, are you thinking, maybe I'll go to jail? Maybe I'm going to get locked up? Are those thoughts also going off in your mind?
Definitely, because I'm like, someone passed away. Yeah. Someone's got to pay for that. Mm-hmm. That shit is not getting swept under the rug. Mm-hmm. And I was telling myself, I deserve everything I get. I was accepting anything they was willing to give me because I'm taking full responsibility. I'm the survivor. I definitely could have fucked up.
So what happens in that courtroom?
The courtroom was very difficult to deal with. The family members were there. My family was there. Strangers were there. The judge was really like, he wanted everybody in the courtroom to pay attention because, like he said, it could happen to any one of us in this room. And, you know, this is a working citizen, school, never been in trouble in my life. And I've never been in trouble. This is my first time getting in trouble. And it is to the masses. Like, I am. Who wants to get in trouble like this?
32 years old?
I was 32 when I got locked up. Yes. Who wants to get in trouble like that and have in a life lost behind that? That is hard to deal with. And some of the family forgave me and I spoke and asked them for forgiveness and just accepted what I felt I deserved. Mm. Whatever the law is going to let me have and whatever society is going to give me for making a mistake, because it was never intentional. I want that to be 100% clear, that no one wakes up, especially not me, wanting to hurt someone or someone to lose a life behind a silly mistake or not being more aware of my actions or my body or just my situation in general for something like that to even happen. And I want people to know that it can happen to you. So pay attention to the things you do, the decisions you make, how your body feels. If you think that one beer, that one drink, if that's the case, whether you're smoking weed, popping pills, mm-hmm. playing sports just extremely tight, flying all over the place, getting money. If your body is telling you chill, I think you should chill.
You told me that till this day you've never seen his face.
Never. And I don't want to because I can barely live with the thought. And then if I was to see his face, I would never get out of my mind. So that has helped me somewhat. To a certain extent, because I would probably never stop thinking about it. I don't ever stop thinking about it. It's not a day that goes by I don't think about it. I think about it all day long, ever since it happened. It's just something that is never going to go away until I'm gone.
How long ago did this happen?
This happened 2013, yes.
The day of sentencing, what do they say? What do they offer you? And also, what goes through your mind when they bang the gavel, when they say, "This, these are the years," you know, take us there.
They offered me 15 years up front, then it came down to 10, then 7, but then I got 15 due 7. So 7 years behind bars and the rest on probation. Wow. So it equals, you know, 15 altogether.
So 15 years?
Yeah, 15 years.
What went through your mind?
Devastated. I don't have a family. I don't have kids. I'm not married. 15 years? I'm 32. That looks crazy. That sounds crazy. But then it's like, damn, this is what I get. I guess it's what I deserve.
That first night in prison, you're still recovering.
Yeah. Physically and mentally, I think... I'll never recover 100% fully. Mm-hmm. My first night in jail, I went straight to the hole. I was in a wheelchair. I was a liability to the jail. I can't be in general population. So where I was at in Georgia, in Clayton County, I went straight to the hole because I was a liability. They had to keep me safe, unfortunately. But that was torture too because I'm in a three-wall cell with no window, straight brick. Metal door would just slide through food. That's it. I ain't got no sun, no window, no nothing. In a hallway with like maybe 6 other cells, including the infirmary, which had about 2 other cells. But you know, that stuff gets crowded because the inmates come in and out, all night, all day. They sick, they fighting. So that jail is just that, like that one hallway where they keep everybody.
How long are you staying there?
4 months.
4 months in this box.
I know, right? I think about
after
that.
You just lost everything.
And I'm in a wheelchair.
In a wheelchair?
And my heart is broken. I'm devastated. I can't live with myself. Don't want to be here because I feel like he should have took me. I'm dealing with how that family feel. I'm dealing with how my family feel. Terrible. I lost weight. I was like, there ain't no sun, so I was super pale. I wasn't eating. I was having nightmares. It was terrible.
How do you use the bathroom? How do you shower?
I wasn't showering because the shower was on the other side of the hallway in another cell. So you had to hold yourself up. I couldn't stand up. at that time. I wasn't even healed. I was only in the hospital for a month. And then the doctor told me it took me like 2 years to walk again on my own, but just physical therapy and all that good stuff. So that wasn't in the future for me to be walking right away. I wasn't, my mother was watching me. My mother was taking care of me. She was holding me down because I couldn't take care of myself. I couldn't do nothing. She was, my mother literally had to wipe me, like, to the point where my mom seen a tattoo I had that's private because she had to see me naked at an older age that she would have never seen if I wasn't in that situation. Like, so being in that hole for so long, I didn't wash until another inmate came in and we got close and she decided to help me. That's how I took my first shower. And when I was taking my shower, it was unbelievable because just to feel the water and then my skin was like kind of shedding, I guess, because you know, exfoliating and stuff every day we take showers, but I wasn't able to do that every day. I was going days. I was just like washed by the sink, me, my arms. And when I would go to the bathroom, I would take the wheelchair, the side of it, I'll pull it up and slide like on the toilet to use it and then slide back. And that took a minute. That hurt. That took a minute. That was like torture too as well. Cause I still had stitches that weren't healed, all that. So it was a lot going on.
It's like I'm at a loss of words, just trying to even imagine that space for you, that dark, physically, mentally, emotionally dark place that you were in.
Yeah, and then you had, you know, I'm in this hole, and you hear inmates screaming all night. You hear fighting, and then that they had some with mental disorders, and them trying to kill themselves, and then being in this dark box, and you in a wheelchair. Somebody lost their life, and they talk about you getting 15 years. I couldn't even gather my thoughts. Mm. I just couldn't believe the situation I was in. Mm. Like, what did I do to deserve this?
What was the most traumatic thing you witnessed in prison?
Wow. There's a couple of things. I'm not going to say literally with my own eyes, but I seen the person laying there. They jumped off a tier, and she broke her neck. I didn't physically, like, literally see her jump, but I could see the body after she did it. And it was on shutdown for a while until they took the body out. I've seen girls get hot water thrown in their face, boiling hot water, because they heat your water up for you so you can cook your soups and things like that. So it's extremely hot, where if you get it thrown in, you could burn, it's going to burn your skin third degree. Yes. Just a lot of violence, unnecessary violence, but it's your environment. I heard people say, oh, prison's easy, prison. No, it's not. People who say that, I just look at them, I want to meet them and have a conversation. I'm like, what are you talking about? Where did you go? Where did you stay? Like,
are you fighting? Are women making passes at you? Or is any of that happening?
I didn't have a problem with fighting because people kind of respected me because I was ready to myself. Once I started talking maybe like a year later, once I went to prison, because jail and prison are two different things, completely two different things. I kind of made sure I minded my business. I definitely got hit on. I definitely had to, I really couldn't fight. So I had to think smart. I physically couldn't fight. So I had to always move different. Like I couldn't really be too reckless or too upfront, like, you know, because I knew I couldn't defend myself. So I had to really think strategically and think ahead of what everybody else is trying to do or what they're trying to get away with. So I had to always stay 10 steps ahead of everybody because I physically couldn't take care of myself. Mm-hmm. So it's like, ooh, how am I going to get around this for all these years? Like, this is crazy. And then they see me in a wheelchair. Like, they see me hurt. Like, they see me come in and I'm hurt. So they see me after a while, how I got out of the wheelchair and all that stuff I had to do. But I was physically hurt. So a lot of females kind of felt sympathy towards that. So I kind of had like support. Like if somebody did want to fight me for whatever reason it was, which is probably nothing at all, they would have to get through like 10 people to get to me.
Wow.
So that was, I thank the Lord for that. Yeah.
Still protected.
Because, you know, being in there, I was just like hurt. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to find out other women's stories too, because I just couldn't believe it. And then when I heard other stories, it's like, like, this is crazy. Like, you hear all the time, you know, all the bad people go to jail, go to prison. But to be honest, there's a handful of people in here that kind of could have got a different punishment, to be honest, but they got to deal with other stuff too. So
I want to briefly talk about losing hope. 7 years is a long time. Was there ever a point, maybe after year one, maybe after the first month, maybe after 2-3 years, but where you was just like, damn, I can't do this no more? Is there like suicide? Is there like, you know, did you ever reach a breaking point during those 7 years?
Yes, but you know what kept me? The Lord, faith. I started reading the Bible. I started having Bible study. Amen. That's all I can go to. There's no one else I could go to. Mm-hmm. I had to go to the Lord. Mm-hmm. He kept me with that faith and kept me on my toes. And I spread the love to the other women too, to keep them from wanting to kill themselves or one, you know, upset they can't see their kids or whatever situation may be. But without the Lord, I tell you what, I don't really know how I would have made it out as sane as I am, because in prison, we have all access to everything y'all have. Drugs, phones, you know, anything. You know, I've seen girls OD in prisons. Mm. So women come in okay, leave out crazy. Why? Because they got hooked. They got addicted to drugs. They turn gay for the stay. And that's when you might be married or have kids or husband. But guess what? You turn gay for the stay because you don't want to get in a beef with nobody and somebody might like you and push up on you. Like, for instance, somebody was trying to push up on me. She even came in the shower on me and I had to push her out of the shower and like literally tell her, like, I don't go that way. Like, and I'm in my head at the moment, I'm like, damn, if I got to fight this chick, this is some bullshit. Because I, you know, my body, I don't even know how my body going to handle this fight, but I'm not going out like that. Mm-hmm. But she backed down because, you know, it gets aggressive in women's prison. Maybe not as aggressive as men, but hands-on physical contact comes in hand when it comes to a sexual assault. It does happen, but not as aggressive as it happens to the men. But it does happen in female prisons.
You told me there was a waiting list to even get into chapel.
Oh, yes, to get in church? Yeah, waiting list to get in church. Too many women wanted to get in. It may be too small of a room, too small of a service, so you had to get on a waiting list in order to go to church.
I want to go back briefly to before the incident. You're 32 years old. What was your life like? What was your mentality like? How did you move around? You know, I'm also thinking about the time lost in prison as such a crux in your life. Because at 32, you would think it would be time to settle down. Maybe if you don't settle down right then and there, you're constantly thinking about settling down. You know what I mean? I had my first kid at 32. You know what I mean? So when I think about sort of that age range, I'm thinking, okay, maybe you're like, let me just, what was your life like? What was your mentality like? How was you living? Was there a lot of partying? Was there a lot of hanging out? Was there a lot of drinking? Were you really like super single? Were you like intimate with somebody?
I'm going to say super single somewhat. Mm-hmm. It's complicated, but I wouldn't say I wasn't partying more than an average person who, without kids, who was single. I worked, you know, school, things like that. So I can't party every day. Who was to get drunk every day? Not me.
Was there a guy that you maybe would have been dealing with that you know, lost contact with, or maybe he knew you were there, so he was coming to see you, writing you letters? Like,
A lot of my family kept it real private. So to a lot of people, once I got out, I found out that people just thought I cut them off, like ghosted them or moved to another state. People just literally thought I like vanished. Really didn't ask questions. They kind of like, unless it got out through a family member and then like, you know, started leaking, you know, word of mouth. But a lot of my relationship wise, people thought I just was like, screw them. But it wasn't like that. I was just in a effed up situation and my family's very private. So, and the way visitation was, and then who knows people's address when you locked up? Like, you don't expect all of that. Right. Like that, nah. And then phone numbers, people don't remember phone numbers. You got your phone numbers in your phone. Ain't nobody trying to make these calls and try to tell people. And then at the time, I was so hurt. I wasn't thinking about that. Like, I was so devastated. Yeah. I didn't start thinking about that till maybe like 3 years later into prison, when I finally kind of settled in, kind of calmed down, kind of got used to routines and stuff, where my heart got a little bit lighter. But at that time in the beginning, I wasn't thinking about none of that. I was just so worried about how am I gonna make it out of here alive, not worse than what I came in and come out better. Like, I can't come out crazy, and this gotta work for me. I gotta figure this out. Mm. You know what I'm saying? That's where I was focused at.
Okay.
That stuff kind of came later on.
Do you think prison sort of robbed you of the experience with maybe like your soulmate or that guy or?
Oh. Mm. That's a good question. After getting closer to God, how I am now, I said it was all for a purpose, and he had it the way it's meant to be. So if I'm not talking to that person now that I'm out, or if there's no communication and it didn't work out, that's just how it was supposed to go. We had our time, our season, our reason is over. That's just how I feel about that. Even though I may have heard it then, but the closer I get to God, I understand it's the reason for everything. So I got to let that go. And if it's meant to be, it'll come back around. That's what they say, right?
That is what they say. Before I jump back into sort of the end of your prison stay, I want to ask, how do you feel about drinking and driving now?
Terrible. No one should do it. I don't care if you sipped. Don't do it. It's ridiculous. It's just don't do it. Don't do it. Don't drink and drive. Don't eat and drive. Don't text and drive. Don't smoke weed and drive. I mean, you need to have all your attention, and you need to be at your best ability of comprehension when you are behind the wheel as a human being in general. Period.
Safe to say you haven't done it again.
Never will. I'm not doing it ever again. I don't even like getting in a car with people who be drinking and driving or coming from somewhere. I'm quick to be like, Latoya, you're so nervous. No, I'm not. See, you're one of those people. You think it can't happen to you. Okay, you're one of those people. It can happen to you. It happened to me. I should be a prime example to the hood. I should be a prime example to people every day. It can happen to you. So don't think it can't. So you need to be safe and practice all the proper rules.
Why do you think it happened to you?
I don't know. But I know I have to tell a story. I know I have to stop people from making bad decisions. Pay attention to their intuition. Be wiser about the moves they make. Uplift people. Let people know that after tragedy, you can move forward. You can still make it happen for yourself. You can't live in that moment. You can't be a victim. And even if you're not the victim, are you the villain? Guess what? You can turn that around. Because ain't nobody perfect on this earth. Sorry, you're not. If you think you are, you're not. People are judgmental. I think we're all judgmental. I think we all stereotype. Even when we say we're not stereotyping, we're humans. It's just natural things that we're going to do.
So to jump back, what was sort of like toward the end of your prison sentence like? And when you're gearing up to come home, talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, while I was in prison, I joined the Authors Club. I started writing, you know, ways to clear my mind. I started writing a book. I said I would finish it when I got out. I did that.
To have a book for me.
I do have a book for you.
Okay.
I do have a book.
Take a look.
I'm sorry to.
Yeah.
I was just excited about.
It's called Surrender.
So this book club, this authors club, you.
Yeah, we had to ask the warden because they didn't have it in the prison. So we had to write a letter, you know, asking, can we have a safe space and quiet place to write and journal? So here it is. Surrender. It's for you. Wow. Make sure you read it.
Yeah, of course.
100%.
Why not? Surrender. Yeah. Loyalty over love.
Yeah, loyalty.
True events.
Loyalty over love. Yes, because when you're in love, people do stupid things. But if you're loyal, you'll do the right thing. You'll make the right decision based off of logic. Love will have you all in your emotions, up and down.
Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
And this book is available. You can tell us where to get it.
You can get it on my website. Is surrenderseries.com, where you can purchase the book. Yes.
Okay, we'll be sure to put something in the caption so people could know where to go. Okay.
Right.
Wow. So you commit yourself to writing this book. You said when I get home, you know, what was that first day home like? What was that first day home like? Could you believe it?
I couldn't believe it. It was like light at the end of the tunnel. Like, because, you know, on your way home, you can't mention it because people do stuff to keep you there. And then I add more time until you. So you got to be quiet about if you get a date to go home. You want to be quiet because I've seen a lot of people not go home when they're supposed to because they got into fights. People set them up. And now they got more time added on to the time. Another year, another 9 months, whatever it may be. So now you're sitting there still. So I had to keep it, you know, pretty quiet. And before I also went home, I transitioned. I went to a halfway house. So where they make you get a job, try to put you back into the real world, you know, like regroup you, refresh you for being locked up for so long. So
what questions do you still have about this whole incident, ordeal, everything you've been through? What questions is still going on unanswered?
The always, the why me. Mm-hmm. What really happened that night? Mm. Like, I literally want to step outside of my body, like in the spirit, and literally stand there and watch it. Like, watch everything that happened in that moment. Wondering what he was thinking at that moment. So many things run through my head. I feel like I have to be all I can be while I'm here on this earth, because I feel like he's even watching me. Like, we're not gonna let your life go unnoticed either. Mm. I'm not gonna play around with that either. Me being out here wild and just not being a great human, being disrespectful to a life lost. So I feel it's my duty to help people stay on the right track and stay focused and stay away from making terrible decisions as much as I can and to uplift people.
Do you forgive yourself?
I haven't yet. I'm just being honest. I could sit up here and lie, but not 100%, no.
Live with regret?
Yes. Yes. I'm still working on it. Working on it.
What's something you would tell your younger self?
Something I would tell my younger self. Life is short. You have to be wise. Make wise decisions. Don't fool around. Don't fool around at all. And do the right thing. Like, if you know something's wrong, don't do it. Because it can turn out tragic. And don't think you can't be that person, because you can definitely be that person. I turned into that person. I did everything to stay out of jail. Oh, you know, everything to be good. Don't sell drugs. You know, don't be stealing. You know what your people tell you. I did all of that good stuff. And guess what? Still landed there.
This is Trapping Anonymous. My name is Chris Stavs.
Let's get it.